When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Skims or Allbirds, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and great marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. It's home of Shop Pay, the number one checkout in the world. You can use it to boost conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going through to checkout. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Allbirds uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/income.
Hello, this is Dr. Grande. Today, I will analyze the trial testimony of Lindsay Clancy's ex-husband, Patrick Clancy. First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the alleged crime, then offer my analysis. Lindsay Clancy was born on August 11, 1990, and raised in Wallingford, Connecticut. She graduated from high school and college and went to work as a labor and delivery nurse for a hospital in Massachusetts. In 2013, she became romantically involved with a technology worker named Patrick Clancy. The couple married in December 2016 and had a daughter named Cora in December 2017. In July 2018, they moved into a 1,700-square-foot house on Summer Street in Duxbury. This is 34 miles southeast of Boston. Patrick worked from home, using an office in the basement. The couple had two sons while living there, Dawson in September 2019, and Cowan in May 2022. Lindsay struggled to return to work after having her first two children due to anxiety about being separated from them. She only went back to work part-time. After the third child, she never returned to work. Lindsay sought mental health treatment from various clinicians, including psychotherapists and physicians. She was prescribed Zoloft and Ativan to treat generalized anxiety disorder. In November 2022, she drove herself to the emergency room after not sleeping for two nights. She was prescribed the sedative Ambien. Lindsay found a new physician and eventually received several more drugs, including Valium, Trazodone, Clonopin, Prozac, Remeron, Lamictal, Benadryl, and Seroquel. She was taking up to four medications a day, although the state would later argue the maximum she ever took at the same time was three. During a hospital visit on December 20, 2022, clinicians found no symptoms of postpartum depression. By the end of that month, Lindsay was having thoughts of wanting to die and thoughts about harming her children. On January 1, 2023, she entered an inpatient program and was prescribed amitriptyline, her 13th medication in 4 months. On January 5, she was discharged. Now moving to the timeline of the alleged crime. On January 24, 2023, Lindsay Clancy took her daughter Cora to an appointment with a pediatrician in the morning. After returning home, she played in the snow with Cora and Dawson. At 4:53 p.m., Lindsay sent a text message to Patrick asking if he would pick up takeout for dinner. 17 minutes later, she placed an order at a restaurant that was farther away than the couple's usual choice for takeout. Patrick left at 5:15 p.m. He went to a CVS store at Lindsay's request, then picked up the takeout. He arrived home at 6:09 p.m. 2 minutes later, at 6:11 p.m., he called 911 after seeing blood on the floor and noticing open windows. While on the phone with the operator, Patrick ran out to the backyard and found his wife on the ground. Lindsay told him their children were in the basement. First responders arrived quickly. They discovered that Lindsay had strangled her three children with exercise bands. Cora and Dawson were dead. Cowan was mortally wounded and would die 3 days later. After the attack, Lindsay traveled through a second-story window and was severely injured upon landing on the ground. She was transported to a hospital where it was discovered that she was paralyzed from the waist down. Eventually, Lindsay was charged with three counts of first-degree murder. On July 27, 2026, Lindsay Clancy's trial started. Her defense was based on legal insanity. During opening statements, the prosecution offered their basic theory. Lindsay suffered from anxiety and depression but was not psychotic. She was extremely controlling, meticulous, and manipulative, and withheld information about her condition from mental health providers and from her husband, Patrick. Lindsay disengaged from mental health treatment when she did not like the plan. The killings were planned in advance. Lindsay arranged for Patrick to leave and killed each child methodically. Her conduct demonstrated consciousness, control, organization, and knowledge of wrongdoing. Not surprisingly, the defense had a different basic theory. Lindsay loved her children and had no rational motive to kill them. She suffered from severe mental health symptoms, which clinicians failed to identify and address. She was the victim of a broken system. Lindsay plainly stated that she had homicidal intent. She was given medications that could have worsened her state of mind. Postpartum psychosis led to delusions and hallucinations. This is why she carried out the killings. The first witness at the trial was Patrick Clancy. Even though he was a witness for the prosecution, much of his testimony functioned as evidence for the defense. Here is a summary of his testimony. Lindsay was a loving and involved mother with no history of violence toward their children. After the birth of their third child, she developed severe insomnia, depression, weight loss, and intrusive thoughts involving the children. She saw multiple clinicians and received a series of medications. Not long before the killings, her condition appeared to improve dramatically. On the day of the killings, Lindsay behaved normally. It seemed to be one of her best days, as far as her mood. At the time I am making this video, the trial of Lindsay Clancy continues. Now moving to my analysis. One of the key questions about Patrick's testimony is this: to what degree did it damage or boost Lindsay's case? Did his testimony support the state's version of events or the defense? Let's take a look at the factors that helped the prosecution, then move to the factors that helped the defense, starting with the testimony that aided the state. Patrick's testimony helped to establish that Lindsay demonstrated purposeful conduct. She made dinner arrangements, sent him on a trip that was farther than necessary, communicated with him as he was running the errands, and conducted the attack. Her behavior was deliberate and goal-directed. Patrick never observed any psychosis. He did not see Lindsay speaking to an unseen person. Lindsay never described hearing a male voice. She only described this after the attack. Lindsay never lost the ability to communicate, and she never appeared to be out of touch with reality. Patrick actually believed that Lindsay had improved in the days leading up to the tragedy. This is damaging because sometimes people who intend on harming themselves show dramatic improvement in mood beforehand. Maybe Lindsay was happy about her terrible plans. The prosecution questioned Patrick about Lindsay's largely full prescription bottles. It appeared as though Lindsay only took a few pills from many of her prescriptions. This makes it seem like she was non-compliant with treatment. How can the defense blame the prescribers if Lindsay was not cooperating with their treatment strategies? Now moving to the factors that aided the defense. Patrick's testimony supported the idea that Lindsay did not have an obvious or traditional motive for the killings. The couple enjoyed financial security, family support, and child care assistance in the form of babysitters. Lindsay was an affectionate and caring mother. There was no custody dispute, no romantic escape plan, no history of mistreatment, and no hostility toward the children. The absence of a rational motive does not prove insanity, but it makes the defense theory seem more plausible. Patrick authenticated Lindsay's dramatic mental health decline. He witnessed insomnia, weight loss, depression, intrusive thoughts, a decrease in functioning, and multiple mental health treatment failures. Patrick had a front row seat to Lindsay's behavior, which gives him a type of credibility the clinicians do not enjoy. His testimony made it difficult for the state to dismiss Lindsay's mental illness as inconsequential, exaggerated, or invented. Lindsay consulted clinicians, accepted medication, went to emergency departments, participated in specialized treatment, involved her family, and mentioned having disturbing thoughts. Patrick did not know that Lindsay was psychotic. He was not advised by clinicians that Lindsay should not be alone with the children. This supports the defense argument that Lindsay's mental illness was misunderstood, even by the professionals. One can infer from Patrick's testimony that he forgave his ex-wife, this could carry enormous emotional weight with the jury. If the person with the greatest imaginable reason to hate Lindsay believes that illness caused the tragedy, perhaps the mental health explanation deserves serious consideration. When considering all the testimony and weighing the factors, did Patrick hurt or help Lindsay's case? Overall, I felt as though he helped her case. Usually in a trial like this, the father of the victims would be railing against the perpetrator, screaming for justice, and wanting the killer to burn in the fires of hell. Patrick did not even come close to that behavior. To the contrary, he was compassionate and sympathetic toward his ex-wife. He appreciated the gravity of her mental illness. The jury could contemplate his testimony and come to the conclusion that the system failed Lindsay. She was loaded up with powerful psychotropic medication, even as her symptoms were misunderstood. Lindsay was not perfectly compliant, but she was far from the most non-compliant person these clinicians had ever treated. The clinicians inadvertently transformed Lindsay into a killer zombie. Something else to consider here is how Patrick humanized Lindsay. This fits in very well with the defense strategy, which includes showing the jury how Lindsay's life will only involve degrees of suffering no matter what the verdict. She lost her children, her husband, and her career. She will be paralyzed for life. Even if she is found not guilty, she will spend years in a mental hospital, which will probably be worse than prison. It's possible that she may never be released. It all depends on how the clinicians evaluate her likelihood of being dangerous. So once again, Lindsay will be subject to the whims of mental health clinicians who may or may not be competent. Lindsay looks like a person who has already lost everything. The jury may be reluctant to stack on one more defeat in the form of a guilty verdict. There is no way to know what the jury will decide. There are many more witnesses scheduled to testify. The trial is projected to last about 6 to 8 weeks in total. Who knows what the testimony might show? Based on the current information, I continue to believe that Lindsay's argument is credible and persuasive. We will have to wait to see if the jury feels the same way. No matter what the result is, I think this case has led to a larger discussion about how women who struggle with postpartum symptoms do not always receive appropriate mental health care. Lindsay was simply given too many drugs. The interactions between these medications are extremely complex and unpredictable. Some of the medications may have been reasonable individually, but there is no established scientific treatment model that involves rapidly moving one deteriorating postpartum client through 13 psychotropic medications. Unfortunately, Lindsay rejected psychotherapy early in her treatment. Clinicians should have never accepted her refusal of counseling. Taking prescription medications without psychotherapy is rarely indicated. It would never be indicated for the symptoms that Lindsay had. She may have been non-compliant, and that was an unwise choice. However, there is the sense that her clinicians did not make a sincere effort to engage her in counseling. Sustained psychotherapy might have exposed the content and progression of Lindsay's disturbing thoughts in a way that brief medication management appointments never could. This could have led to an intervention before the danger became catastrophic. These clinicians may have substituted serial prescribing for sustained counseling, assessment, diagnostic clarity, and coordinated care. Instead of sitting in front of a human and being encouraged to explore her feelings, Lindsay was left with bottles of drugs. Guilty or not, her case represents a harsh indictment of a broken system. Those are my thoughts on the case of Lindsay Clancy. Thank you so much for watching. I'll talk to you soon.